Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have John and Nostradamus himself, Mikey Dudek, joining us to discuss the big, I guess we'll call it a big win versus Charlotte. Bounce back for Illinois after a bit of a losing streak here. We've got back on our winning ways, and Mikey with the 24-14 call was about as close as you can get, huh, Mikey?
Yeah, no, Dan, you texted me about that, I think a little bit through the fourth quarter, and I was like, oh, shoot, because I wanted Illinois to run up the score, but I also deep down wanted to be correct on my scoring prediction. So, I mean, we got the win, which is most important, and somehow I predicted the correct score.
And even your pick of the week, you were hot all week because Kirby Joseph had, besides, you know, a mental error here or there, but he had an unreal game, you know, with the fumble recovery, the big pass breakup that led to a missed field goal afterwards. So
some would say he was bearing it all on the field this week too.
Yeah, he definitely, the moon was out in Champaign in the middle of the day.
I missed that.
Oh, you did? Yeah. I mean, it was one of those where he like rolled over, and the way he got tackled, like it was a portion of his like girdle or whatever shorts he was wearing underneath. But then there was some bear skin for all to see.
I was laughing when they showed the replay of that because, you know, the production team was like, abort, 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 because as soon as they were about to cut to it, they just immediately stopped the replay, which was hilarious. But
the production team had just the worst day of all time. Are you like, for that game was just how to not produce a game for BTN. They also had like the ones that we put up on Twitter in terms of like the bad graphics. They also had one where they were showing James McCourt when he was attempting a field goal, and it was like, his long was like 50 something, and then there was minus 999. I was like, they just were all around bad.
We were trying to screen grab as many as we could. I'd do spans playing on the defensive side of the ball along with Max Rosenthal. It's all sorts of
all bad,
interesting production. But I guess that's what you get when you're the, I don't know, probably not the marquee game of the week against Charlotte.
Yeah, they have some interns probably thrown together those graphics there, and they see number six, so they assume Deuce Span and not Tony Adams and just throw him on defense.
It is what it is. That's the price we pay as Illinois football. But, hey, we'll trade that for a win in a heartbeat.
Yeah, how about it? I mean, Chase Brown, you know, obviously unreal game. I saw he was Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week, so well-deserved. You know, I thought he ran hard all game. That 80-yarder that he had, he was booking it. You know, the guy's got muscles on top of muscles, probably 2% body fat, and really got to see him go to work for seriously the first time all season, because he's been a little banged up. And obviously, you know, got to give credit to the offensive line. They were moving those guys, you know, 2-3 yards down the field on every single play. So hats off to the offensive line and Chase Brown on a great morning into the afternoon.
You mentioned the 80-yard run. My favorite part of that, his four runs leading up to that, he went 10 yards, 20 yards, 31 yards, and then his next run was 80 yards. So he was just progressively moving forward, and I'm like, man, to get 140 yards on four carries right there in the third quarter, that was about as good as you can ask for.
Yeah, the best butterfly effect in hindsight that I would say we could look to is potentially Josh McCray's fumble in the red zone, because I think some of this could be, you know, the short term of obviously Josh McCray having an unreal last couple weeks, but then also the staff, you know, he's kind of their guy. He was their first commit and whatnot. And not that necessarily that they were forgetting about Chase Brown. He's, Mikey, as you said, been banged up, but that fumble kind of allowed them to start riding him like a bell cow. And then he just, you know, went off and reminded them why he was, you know, third team all Big Ten last year. So it's one of those where it's almost like not a good thing that Josh McCray fumbled. I mean, obviously, hopefully he learns from that and his ball security improves going forward. But at the same time, it was good because then it kind of just thrust the game right into Chase's hands. And boy, oh boy, did he take that and go.
That cut that Chase had on the 31-yard run was maybe one of the nastiest cuts I've seen in a while. Did you see he like snapped that dude's ankles in the hole?
He's so elusive, and I never pictured him as that. I sort of just saw him as speed and strength, not really the quickness. But when he gets out in the open field, I mean, he's making guys miss like Reggie Corbin used to. I know you guys remember those highlights. So it was great to see him on full display. And John, definitely with the McCray fumble, you know, we got to see Chase out there more. And, you know, obviously it paid off, and hopefully Josh can learn from that and they could be a powerful 1-2 punch going forward.
And you mentioned the offensive line was, you know, had themselves a pretty good day, which I'd agree with. I know Vidarian Lowe was PFF's offensive lineman of the week. And I thought the tight ends blocked really well this game too. Tip Ryman was out there quite a bit. Luke Ford was pretty good in the blocking game as well. So when you have all the guys in the trenches blocking and pushing that line of scrimmage back like they did against Charlotte this week, and I know we talked about it last episode, you might have a little bit of a mismatch there in terms of size and Power 5 bodies versus non-Power 5 bodies, but that's what you're supposed to do to a team like that, and glad to see Illinois come out on that front and execute.
Yeah, and shout out to Josh Kreutz getting the tackle eligible or the receiver eligible number at 95, just being the third tight end on some of those plays. That's how you know that, like, Danny, like you were saying, and like we talked about last week, it was such an obvious mismatch that they could kind of be. I know I've kind of harped on the play calling in terms of how stubborn and rigid they are, but you could definitely be stubborn and rigid in terms of, yeah, we're just going to yam it down their throats and we're going to put three tight ends, three big bodies out there and just absolutely shove it down your gullets. And it worked to the tune of a nice 24-14 score. Although I will say, and we can maybe segue into that, but it could have been a lot worse for Charlotte if Brandon Peters connects on like three or four or five more. Like, he's, I don't know what exactly it is, but he's just a tick off. And I can't quite put my finger on it if it's, you know, the lack of experience in the system or what, but it's striking me as odd that a 6-year dude is having as many struggles as he is in terms of, you know, locking onto a read too soon or going through a progression too quickly or whatever it might be.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, there's something just off, and we've seen him, you know, make some throws that not only has he not seen this year, but he hasn't really attempted. There's guys, Isaiah Williams standing in the flat wide open several times this game. And I mean, we know a quarterback's not going to hit every read or find every open, you know, receiver. They got to go through their progressions. They have their top receiver they're supposed to look at first. And if that's not open, then they, you know, check down. But there were some pretty obvious and, quite frankly, egregious misses on his part, and the execution wasn't really there. So, you know, like you said, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is because we've seen him do it. But I mean, the quarterback's got to come out, whoever it is, and just play a little bit better.
Yeah. And one thing, you know, just to talk about the quarterback here, I do not understand why on, you know, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, those 3rd and long situations, Brandon continues to throw the ball to like a 3-yard out Luke Ford with 3 guys on him. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me why he's not, you know, taking an extra half second, waiting for a route to develop past the sticks and giving those guys a shot. That's something, you know, regardless of who the quarterback will be moving forward, I definitely want, you know, to throw those 50-50 balls, you know, give those guys a shot, because we're constantly burning drives when we're not even giving ourselves a chance by, you know, football 101. Like, you need 10 yards. Why are you throwing it 3 yards when a guy's got 2 guys on him? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
And he had the protection. Like,
yeah, he just needs to wait. Yeah.
The offensive line played well. He had time this week to make those reads, and he wasn't quite executing.
I do have a bit of a theory, because Tony Peterson's press conference today, which is when we're recording it, a Monday, he talked about how their play calling is, you know, he wasn't dismissing the fluidity that you can get into in a game. I think they don't really value it too much, but he was talking about how Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is when they really, you know, hammer things out. And I know also from the press conferences last week that Bielema was talking about how he wanted to get guys, you know, a set number of targets and get guys involved, probably like Luke Ford and Daniel Barker and even Isaiah. So the couple plays where he was targeting Luke Ford, or even the touchdown to Daniel Barker, I think it was one of those where he was going so quickly through his progression because he knew that they want me to get the guy this ball, or this play is designed to go to exactly this guy instead of reading where it's potentially designed to go to. So that's where a couple of those balls on third down, I know that, like, you need to be throwing to the sticks, but it seemed like, especially the one where Isaiah was wide open in the flat in the red zone, looking back on that and then having that hindsight information of what Tony Peterson said in terms of they're like kind of predetermining this. His read was Luke Ford the entire way. Also, he kind of had Luke Ford too, if he doesn't loft that and throws more of a bullet, neither here nor there. But that's why I think he was just so locked into, okay, I need to get this ball to Luke Ford, which is okay to a degree. It just sucks because like there's so few pass plays and the way that they're kind of building this out, like I said, since it's so pre-planned, it doesn't really allow for a lot of reading in that sense because yeah, he had Isaiah open a bunch and it would have, you know, gotten the ball into playmaker's hands regardless. But that's kind of my working theory is that because a lot of this is being not forced upon him, but hammered home during the week of practice, that he's kind of just, okay, I got to get it to this guy. And so then he's getting it there too quickly. In fact,
Bielema has, you know, his motto has been, we're going to establish the run, and which is great. And they did that this week, but to, you know, only have 78 yards of passing offense, that's not really going to win you too many games down the road. And I know, you know, if the running backs and the O-line play like they do, you can find some wins here and there running the ball as well as Illinois did this week. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you're not getting to 150, 200 yards passing, at least just so you have a little bit of a balance and you keep the defense off balance, you're going to have trouble, you know, later on this season, especially when you get to face the Wisconsins and the Iowas and the Minnesotas of the world.
Yeah. And that really becomes an issue, Dan, as you mentioned, with those better, you know, Big Ten teams, where they're just going to line up, you know, play man to man on the outside, stack the box, and, you know, force us to pass the ball because, you know, we haven't been able to do that. So they're going to do everything they can to shut down the run and force the ball into 18's hands to throw it to one of their receivers. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, Wisconsin, you know, they've historically had a good defense the last few years, how they come out and play us this weekend. Big game, and you know, we definitely need a more balanced attack.
Quick question. Is the Deuce Span play dead?
No.
Not yet.
No. Did you see him on that route? That dude is so flipping fast.
But if you can't like get him the ball.
He was shot out of a cannon. I don't care. You keep running that play because even if you don't hit it, you know, I don't know, if you only hit it 20 or 30% of the time, that is so worth it because yes, I get that it's a Charlotte DB, but at the same time, like that is just freakish speed. He absolutely torched that dude on that missed deep ball.
And Carlos Sandy had a step on his guy too early in the game, laid out for it, but was not to be. But I was thinking about that. I don't think we've had a deuce completion on the deep ball since the first couple weeks there. But I mean, it's not a high percentage play that you're going to hit every time. But like you said, I guess if you hit it, it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, we definitely need to. I don't know. Tell me if you guys feel this way. And I hate saying this because I played receiver, but whenever we drop back to pass and I know it's going to be a bomb, I am just not confident in it being completed. I don't know. Is it just because we've seen very few completed this year or what? But it's you know, and I feel the opposite with the other teams. When they get back and you could see their quarterback, you know, getting ready to launch it, I'm like, oh, shoot, the guy's probably, you know, got three steps on our guy and going to, you know, get a 50-yard gain. And I just do not have the same feeling when our guys are on offense.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, the fact that, like, the only burner you really have is Deuce Span. And even in recent vintage, the only guy who was like a go up and get it guy was Josh Amaterbebe, and he was just a physical freak. So you could, even if he was getting draped in coverage, you could still find him deep. But even then, like, I didn't have like the most confidence in the world. So yeah, it's probably just something like in even the drops too, the last 4 or 5 years since you stopped playing, like the drops have been super apparent. And that's one of those where like, I just have no confidence that an Illinois receiver is going to catch a deep ball regardless, but especially if it's not a guy who's gaining separation with regularity, then I'm just not thinking that. I totally have the same vibe in terms of, yeah, it's a nice shot, but I doubt it's going to actually be completed.
One guy who continues to impress me on the in the wide receiving core is Casey Washington. How about that big time play? Illinois is down 14-10 at that point. They're kind of backed up in their own, and it's a third and long. He catches it a yard short and just fights two guys off for the extra yard or two just to get across the first down marker. That was, I thought, probably the turning point in the game.
Yeah, huge. He had a couple good plays on third down. Been impressed with him the last week. You know, his technique is very good. He's like a route technician, and I would like to see him. I chose him as my player, pick of the week a few weeks ago, and he had a horrible game. So, maybe for our pregame, I might have a little Casey Washington surprise pick for everybody. Cause I've seen some stuff and, we just need him to put it together. Cause I think he is our go-to receiver. Definitely on the outside going forward.
Although Casey might tell you to stay away if you jinxed him last time, maybe just don't pick him and he'll have another good game. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'll think about it.
It's going to be such a surprise pick that you're letting everyone know 4 days in advance.
Yeah.
But the thing with Casey, like he's performed really well. The one thing I'll nitpick is his physicality. He needs to, I don't know what exactly it is, but even on that third down that we were just talking about where his physicality helped him in the sense that he got the extra 2 yards. No. But I'm talking about in terms of him fighting off that release. Like he was letting the DB get hands on him a little bit too much. And I know that some of that is just like, because of the route that was called and some guys are going to have good coverage. Like there needs to be, I don't know exactly what his hand fighting techniques are in those scenarios, but I would like to see him be a little bit more physical, get those hands off, get a little bit of a cleaner release so that, he's not having a guy draped all over him in those moments. And maybe he can just spin out and get those 2 extra yards instead of having to fight over a guy. I mean, it's still an unreal play. Like I said, I'm nitpicking because I can armchair quarterback that to the nth degree, but that is one thing that I noticed on that play is that, the dude also interfered and held him. But that just is something that, as you get a little bit stronger, as more years in the system, you refine your technique. I mean, Mikey can probably speak to this the best of the three of us, but that's something where, you hope that you get a little bit of a cleaner look at that ball instead of having a guy draped all over you.
For sure. Definitely, would like to see him win at the line more, especially, as we spoke on earlier, going into these Big Ten teams where they, are confident in their secondary and in their corners, matching up man to man. So they can shut down our run. It's going to be, so important that our guys can win at the line of scrimmage. Because if not, then it's going to be a long day for our offense.
Boys, I got to ask, Brett Bielema, does he listen to the Field Pass? Or at least does he listen to Illini Twitter? Because boy, oh boy, did he change his tune on fourth down this week.
We got two of them.
Two of them.
Not one. We got two. And they were both perfect calls.
Perfect calls.
Fourth and two. And fourth and three late, and I checked the stats on both. I have this shiny new app that tells me fourth down what the ideal expected value play is to go for it. Both times, it was the play to go for it. Added, I think, 3% winning percentage, expected winning percentage in the with his decision on fourth and two in the first half from, I think, the 30-yard line. And then it was basically a toss-up in the other one, but you're up 10 points with a minute 20 left. He changed his tune. He said, all right, not making this mistake again, which I was a little surprised by because he seemed pretty confident in those decisions the first, two times they came around, and he said he'd do it 100 out of 100 times. Here he is, against Charlotte, changing his tune. So what do you guys think changed? Is he a Field Pass listener?
I think he's tuning in. Twice a week. What are we, the highest rated football podcast in the world now?
So we gotta be.
Yeah, definitely number one. So props to Coach BB for tuning in to get some weekly advice, and he definitely listened to us.
Yeah, I mean, I was incredibly happy to see that, obviously, after the fiasco that I put on the pod last week. That was great to see. Now there is, I feel like I'm just like Johnny Caveat the entire, where I'm like nitpicking everything. I mean, I guess that's what you do in a win, is you try and find the things that you can improve upon. But I'm hoping that this isn't just something where he was like, yeah, this is Charlotte, we can run all over them. And the fact that the 2 weeks prior, those decisions were made against Big Ten teams, and he might not have the confidence. But then at the same time, see, here's the thing too, is that like, you get that first down on the first fourth and two, and you've got like Julian Pearl and Chase Brown pulling the entire Charlotte defense
rugby
10 yards past the line to gain. Like that is what I'm talking about. Like when you show confidence in your offense. It's not even like trust also the added benefit of your defense then not being on the field. That's the main thing that you also, when you're going for fourth and shorts, when it's near midfield or not quite in like field goal range, it's like you're extending the drive and you're also giving your defense a break as well. So that like even the end of the game, you're keeping them off the field. You're securing a great game, a second half where they didn't allow any points. Like that's just something where it makes sense that if it's a high percentage play, you go for it because you should be able to get those couple yards. And then it just helps your team morale, even like the unquantifiable things in terms of, you know, making your team feel better about itself. And that was just something where getting it not once, but twice was, I was definitely a happy boy on Saturday.
As was I. Danny Stats smiling.
Yep. Keeping your defense off the field too. Getting those guys some rest. Very important. So Danny Stats was smiling. That's for sure.
I was laughing too because I was unable to watch the game live as I was at a different game, a game in which Alabama played Ole Miss and Ole Miss went for it on fourth and short three times on the first possession of the game. I was looking at everyone. They're like, yeah, they go for it pretty much every time on fourth down. So it's not really a big deal. And I was like, I didn't know what to think because after seeing Illinois just punt every time on fourth and short, I was like, wow. To have a coach in Lane Kiffin that just likes to roll the dice, or not even roll the dice in the most like advantageous way, I guess. That was something that stuck out to me. But seeing Brett Bielema change his tune on that front, I was about as happy as can be.
Yeah, and even talking about like the SEC, the migration in terms of how prevalent fourth and short attempts have become in the NFL and the SEC, it's like that migration will slowly, like even like Ohio State will do it. Obviously, the teams with the top tier talent are going to be confident that they can go get a couple yards, and that's different than, you know, like I said, a school like Illinois is, you know, maybe not know, but at the same time, you got incredible run blockers as evidenced by the PFF grades this year, so you should, I would always go for it, even like I said, unless you're in the shadow of your own goal line, it just makes sense. It's a plus play to get after, and you should just, you got to have, and it's not going to work out every time, just go for it. So I love to see it. Hopefully, you know, we don't have many occasions the rest of the year where we have to go after that because Chase Brown and Josh McCray and Reggie Love and Jakari Norwood are just shoving it down dudes' throats. But if it does come up, I hope that he has confidence in them to just get that damn yard.
Mikey, going to hit you with a callback. Owen Carney, bags of rice. Did that make the difference for him? Two sacks this week. He was getting in the backfield.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think? Hand strength elite?
Yes. He's probably squeezing rice all day, every day. He did back-to-back sacks at a point in the game where we needed him. Been a, you know, semi-quiet year for Owen after second team All-Big Ten last year. So, you know, good to see him get involved and make two huge plays for us, you know, that, you know, changed the game and kept the game going in our favor. So, The bags of rice, the squeezing of that rice, getting the hand strength going, you know, really worked out for Owen.
Some people are asking, is he working at Chipotle? Is he working at Cactus Grill the way he's been squeezing that rice? Because he's living in the backfield.
I love it. Probably him and Tank down there in the weight room squeezing those rice bowls.
That's right.
Gotta love it. Yeah, I mean, it was massive. It was great to see because at that point, Charlotte had their second string right tackle in the game, and he went full beast mode, just take over these two plays. I know that's going to be a pass. I know that you're inferior to me. I'm going to absolutely demolish you and get to the quarterback and disrupt this game. And it was huge too, because at that point, DJ Johnson was in the game because Isaiah Gay and Seth Coleman were both out with injuries, and they like immediately started running right at DJ Johnson the first couple plays that he was in. And so it was massive that he could kind of step up on that other side of the line when it was an obvious passing down and just take over a game and get the boys off the field. And then, you know, the rest was history.
Yeah. I mean, speaking on our defense, the adjustments that we've made, you know, the last few weeks have been astronomical. I mean, I you know, we obviously never saw that in the Coach Lovey Smith era. So just to see, you know, Maryland, Purdue, you know, Charlotte all had successful first few drives. And then from then on out, you know, we seem to fill those holes, fill those gaps. So, you know, hats off to Ryan Walters and our defense, because, you know, the past few weeks, I've thought they've done a tremendous job, you know, making game time adjustments to, you know, put our team in a position to win, and it's clearly working. So hats off to them. You know, big one this weekend, though, in which we'll touch in our preview episode.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on the defensive front. For them to do it against Purdue and Maryland was good to see, and now they're kind of parlaying that into another good defensive performance against Charlotte. So three straight, you know, good defensive performances, I'll call them, is enough for me to think we've kind of turned the page, or this is kind of what we'll see going forward. And I know they picked on Taz Nicholson a little bit this week, but they're going to do that to a freshman, and you got to respond to the adversity. And Illinois, I mean, like you said, made the adjustments and were able to limit them to, you know, a shutout in the second half. So couldn't be happier with that.
Yeah, Danny Stats, question for you. I'm really putting you on the spot here.
Okay.
When was our last shutout half? I do not know the answer. Do you know?
I have no idea, to be honest.
We need to get the Illini Oracle on the line. Robert would know this.
Yeah,
sure.
we might need to.
Should we call him up and clip it in here?
You guys want to?
Yeah, let's do it.
Robert.
It's darkness.
We're putting you on the spot.
Mikey's got a question, and okay. We didn't have the answer off the top of our head, so we're cutting to you in the middle of the field
pass. Okay, let's do it.
You ready?
Hit me.
When was the last time Illinois football had a shutout half, either first or second half of a game?
You mean besides?
Besides this last week.
Shutout half.
Come on, Robert.
You know the answer to this.
Yes.
We didn't initially, which is what prompted us to, because we were kind of like grasping at straws, and we were like, oh, Robert will probably know.
Wait, you haven't looked this up? You're just seeing.
But then in the interim,
one.
We now know.
We now know, but we want to phone a friend. Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
Talk yourself through it.
Hold on.
You got this.
I'll be dubbing in the Jeopardy music right about now.
I mean, my initial thought is like Murray State in 17, 16, 15, 15. Murray State in 15 is my first thought. But hold on, let me think this through.
We can make this a multiple choice if you want.
No. That's too easy. Okay, I'm gonna phone a friend. No. What's the one where I can get a hint? There isn't really no. Okay,
we'll give you the year.
Okay.
2019.
Shutout half against Rutgers?
Boom!
You got it.
There it is.
Okay.
Bing, bing, bing.
Rutgers second half.
You got it.
Okay, well, since I don't have a computer in front of me, when was the Murray State 52-3?
I think that was 15.
15 or 16.
It was 2016.
No, it was 14. It was 14 because, I mean, it's your first game. Wait, no.
No.
It was September 3rd, 2016.
Did Facebook wipe the Murray State game off everyone's brain?
Ooh, many are asking.
2016, first game of the year, 52-3.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Shut I wasn't in that one.
Rutgers. That's good. That's interesting.
We actually had three shutout halves that year.
Would you believe I was this is gonna be great. I was literally asleep. So last night, so I'm always up till midnight, okay? So last night, like,
where are you? Are you camping or something?
Writing. We had a long, long weekend. Last night I fall asleep. Super early, and I woke up this morning you know, one of those, like, you fall asleep early and then you wake up at 4:30 and it's like, what do I do now? Like I just slept eight hours. I'm up. What am I supposed to do? So now my sleep schedule's all off. Tonight, I got a lot to do and I'm just dead tired. So I go to bed. My wife and I go to bed at 9 o'clock. Again, I never go to bed before midnight. So I'm completely off. And
then we start blowing up your phone.
Yes. I hear a few buzzes on the old, I got the silencer off. And I look at the front screen and I see the latest text from Mikey just is like three goats. And I'm like, what is? So then I'm like, wait.
So I
pull that up and then I see, you know, call active and then I see the text that says please. And of course I'm one to be like, okay, well I have to respond if they're asking nicely. And so, you know, I got up and I came outside.
Oh, we appreciate that.
That's commitment. Thank you.
And you found your way to the right answer, but at this point in time, we will let you get back to your sweet dreams about the field pass part two and another storming of the field this weekend.
We really had a shutout half in 2019.
We had three of them.
Three of them.
I would have never gotten that.
We thought it was going to be way farther back than that, but we were surprised to find Lovie Smith.
All right, do this anytime. I enjoy the drop, and I want to go back to sleep.
All right. Good night. See you this weekend.
Sweet dreams, King.
Gotta love that from Robert. You knew that he was gonna be the guy who had the at least some semblance of the knowledge right off the bat. With the defense, though, like kind of just to continue on the point we were making before that, the one thing that I loved and kind of might correspond to how well the defense has been performing recently, Keith Randolph getting back in the lineup. That dude is an absolute disruptor. I mean, not only is it great that he had an interception, but some of the plays that he makes in the run game where he just is immediately stuffing and his reaction times are unreal. I mean, I love Seth Coleman in terms of like the young guys, and Johnny Newton's great too, but Keith Randolph is just, he is an absolute disruptor and a real key piece for this defense.
And this defense is like, the guys who have been performing as of late are pretty young in terms of their football years at Illinois. So we're going to have some of those guys like Keith Randolph around for years to come, hopefully. And like you said, with a body like that as a freshman, imagine a couple more years in the weight room and what he's going to be. You know, he could be a first, second, third round pick in the future.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and another guy stood out, my man Kirby Joseph.
Oh yeah,
you know, how flying about those
football your instincts? Pick of the week.
Yeah, he's just flying around, you know, laying people out. You know, he had legally. That fumble recovery. Yeah, legally made some good plays.
That's kind of sad that football's gotten to that point where I was like worried that he was going to get, like, it was an unreal hit and it was kind of iffy in terms of if he made contact with the head, but he threw his shoulder. So like at the same time, like that's good old fashioned football right there for you. That was great.
Yeah. He had that QB's eyes and got over there just in time to lay wood and jar the ball loose. So, I mean, those football instincts, he's just seemingly in the right place at the right time here the past couple of weeks. And I like that he's flocking to the ball and making some plays. Always good to see.
Yeah, you definitely see his confidence, you know, going up, which is huge when you're out there. You know, Dan, as you mentioned, the past few weeks, it just seems like he's been getting better and better. And you're really starting to notice him out on the field. So, you know, let's hope, you know, he can continue this streak and, you know, continue to make plays like he's made the past few weeks. Cause, you know, as we get into this gauntlet of Big Ten plays, we're really going to need them from, you know, guys all over the defense and, you know, especially in that secondary.
John, I want to ask you this. Do you think Kirby Joseph has, you know, benefited the most from the defensive scheme change, you know, going to the Ryan Walters defense, or who on the defense would you look at and say they've had the best luck with the scheme change in terms of their role and things? Because the outside linebackers are, you know, a big change, but seeing a guy like Kirby Joseph ball hawk out in the back end of the secondary has been something I've liked watching, but I'm curious on your take.
Yeah, I mean, he's quickly gained ground. I think Seth Coleman is still the leader in the clubhouse just because this scheme is made very perfectly for an athlete like him, and he's so disruptive but also able to, you know, drop back and pass coverage and be an effective ball player. But at the same time, that was one thing I was going to actually make this point. So thanks for setting me up like that, Dan, because the fact that Derek Smith was playing fairly well, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, he was out there lighting the world on fire, but he wasn't playing too poorly in terms of relative to what we had seen in the past. Mm-hmm. He was doing well. And then Kirby Joseph just comes along and he, you know, usurps him. And it's very interesting because I know Robert wrote about this and Bielema said something in a presser either last week or 2 weeks ago about Josh McCray and how he didn't play him that first week in Nebraska because he was worried that if he rushed him too quickly, then he might, you know, set himself back 5, 6, 7 games in his development. And so it's more of like a fluid player development situation for this staff seemingly. And who knows if that's the right way to go about it. But for a guy like Kirby Joseph, that's something where they must have seen something in practice, you know, also his special teams play, something that he's, you know, really excelled at. So they might have been more willing to give him an opportunity, kind of like Devin Witherspoon, his true freshman year under the Lovey defense. That's one of those where maybe they just decided to give him an opportunity. He's really flourished because of that confidence he's gained. Like you were saying, Mikey, it's really great to see. And it's, you know, not super surprising because he's been in the program for 4 years now, I think. So he's kind of like his physical attributes and his football acumen are kind of catching up to each other. But it's still great to see that he's just, you know, exploded on the scene like this. And hopefully, you know, he can continue to be a playmaker.
Agreed. All right. We will leave it at that. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Field Pass. You can find us on Facebook, if operational, Instagram, if operational, Twitter, probably, maybe not. You can also find us on YouTube, though. So we're just at the Field Pass, pumping out a lot of content on our YouTube page. John's got his football breakdowns. You can find us on Twitter for game analysis, some funny tweets, a couple memes, whatever you want. You let us know. Feel free to interact with us.
What about Mikey's stats?
Oh, good call. If you really made it this far in the episode, you're in for a treat right now because tomorrow, Mikey Dudek, Lincoln Park Fields, he'll be playing in his third flag football game. Mikey, what's the matchup looking like? You guys are 1-1.
Yes, we're 1-1. We're actually 1-2. I just figured out I missed week one. So we're 1-2, not quite 500 yet. We're playing a team 2-1. They have strength on the outside, strength in the defense. Been watching film the last few days. But I will say we just added former Illini basketball player, 6'10", Maverick Morgan to the roster.
Oh, boy.
So look for those, you know, goal line packages where we're just sending it up and he's dunking on them.
All right. But we're going to do a Mikey specific stats of the week this week. So tweet us, hashtag Mikey's specific stats of the week. Give us your prediction, what you think Mikey's going to put up in his third flag football game here. Are we going to say closest to? Should we say yard? Should we say just total stat line?
And yes.
Yeah, let's go. It's kind of a gray area.
Yeah, we'll use our discretion.
Okay.
Yeah, we need catches. How many catches, yards, touchdowns, and interceptions you think?
Okay.
The panel will decide. The three of us will determine who is the closest.
And winner, we will we'll get in contact with you, send you a Field Pass t-shirt free of charge. You'll have to let us know your size and win yourself a prize. So Mikey's specific stats of the week, hashtag it. Send us your predictions, and if you can go Nostradamus mode like Mikey has for Illinois the past couple weeks, you'll be wearing some new Field Pass merch. So find us on Twitter there. Send us your tweets, and we'll announce the winner. Thanks for listening to this episode, and go Illini!